never filtered, always fun.
I don't want this to come across the wrong way. He's a handsome guy. Like, he is a good-looking man.
You would swipe right on Tinder if he came up. That's what you're saying.
But
that's fine.
If I could change this punim for his, I'm in right now. No right. Questions asked.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Steve Simmons in here to wrap up the week on Overdrive. And then, as we pointed out yesterday, you're going to be down in Vegas pretty much all week next week. So I don't know when you're going to be back on the show.
I don't know if I'll be back on the show for a long time, because you get your regulars back in, what, a week?
After Labor Day.
And
Tuesday after Labor Day.
And then I'm kind of persona non grata from this show, so I'll go back to being... You
know, yeah, more or less. We'll see in July.
Waiting for a phone call kind of thing.
All right, that's
okay. I didn't get a lot of winter shifts. In fact, I got zero winter shifts.
Yeah, on this show anyway. Once the boys are here, we kind of lock in. And
yeah. Even when you use subs, I was like third on the list or something. I don't know.
I didn't get
too many bullpen calls on that one.
No, well, I mean, when Naylor used to be here, you guys would be kind of rotating through. But...
Well, I had two. When Naylor, he had a different co-host every day, and I had two of the 5 days. So I was in my regular two spots all week.
And you had that penciled in, like, you knew
everyone had a day or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dave Hodge was in one day, and Tim Graham from Buffalo was in one day, and Feschuk, I think, and Bruce Arthur. So I think we kind of rotated through.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know.
Yeah, we're all about consistency and stability.
Yes.
Now.
And then you came in with your boys.
And we just knocked all you guys out.
Took over, and, you know, it was like, you know, Jonas Siegel got in here.
Yeah,
and,
Jonas does, but Jonas.
And Dave Poulin came in, and Button came in.
Yeah, we used Craig a lot.
Everyone but me.
Which, yeah, I wouldn't take it personally, Steve.
I'm not taking anything personally. I'm happy to be here and get the opportunity.
Are you really that happy to be here?
As a matter of fact, I am. Yeah.
Where would you rather be if you had a choice?
See, what are you, Marv Levy?
Yeah.
That was his line he'd always say. Is there any place you'd rather be?
That's such a sports cliche. Like, I remember when I first got to junior, when I was playing in the O. I was only in the O for like a year and a half.
Who was your coach?
Bud Stefanski, my first year. And at that point, you're 16, 17, 18, 19, but you're trying to act like a pro in junior, right? And I remember we were playing in like North Bay or something. We were playing somewhere I didn't want to be, like generally speaking.
Yes.
But the saying was like, North Bay on a Saturday night, where else would you rather be, boys? And then people were like, we'd all walk on the ice. And even at that point, I'm like, I can think of a few places I'd rather be. Well, like, I'm happy I'm here, but...
Harry Neal, who, you know, tells some of the best stories of anybody in hockey, you know, getting older these days, but in his prime, Harry Neal could tell a story like no one. When Harry Neal was coaching in the WHA, I think he was coaching the Minnesota Fighting Saints, and they hadn't been paid in weeks. Like, the team was out of money, they hadn't been paid, and they pull in to play whoever they're playing, and he gets up at the bus, you know, as coaches tend to do before the team gets off, to walk into the arena and says, "Boys, you've heard about the big games in your life. Tonight's one of the small ones." And he gave a speech about how meaningless the game was and hoping they got paid one of these days. And by the way he tells the story, it's brilliant.
You don't hear that much in North America anymore. You hear that in Europe all the time. Like in the KHL, I think they're currently going through that, where guys just aren't getting paid and teams are folding all the time. And
one of my favorite stories, there were so many in the WHA. And Ed Willis, by the way, wrote a terrific book, if anybody hasn't read it, about the WHA years and all the crazy things that happened. But the Calgary, I think they were the Calgary Cowboys. They weren't around very long, but they were flying from wherever it was in the United States back home to Calgary on a charter. There was only one problem. The team was bankrupt. So the team couldn't really afford the charter, let alone to pay for the gas. And so they had to find a way to... They could somehow get the plane, but they couldn't pay for the fill-up. Their credit card was not being taken. And so Eric Bishop was the play-by-play man of the Calgary Cowboys and also of the Calgary Stampeders in those days. And Eric Bishop paid for gas on his credit card so that the team could fly home from, I think it was Houston.
With the expectation he'd be repaid?
He was repaid. And the owner actually was a pretty wealthy guy. I think it was just the team that was, in fact, bankrupt. The owner certainly was. It was Jimmy, the guy that owns all those billboards all across Canada. He's one of the wealthiest Canadians.
From three billboards? He's in the billboard game?
Yeah, he's in the billboard business, and he's huge.
There's money in the billboard
game. Oh, my.
Based on what?
If Tyler Hunt could Google his name right now, I don't have a computer sitting in front of me right now, but billboards, Jimmy, I forget his last name. This guy is one of the wealthiest. Patterson?
Jimmy Billboard.
Jimmy Patterson, I believe, is his name. He's one of the wealthiest Canadians.
Okay, but let me get this straight. Try to find the details. He has a monopoly on every billboard in the country?
Jimmy Patterson is the name. If you know that name.
But why can't someone like step onto his turf and be like, I'm not buying your billboard.
I'm saying that's part of what made him very, very wealthy.
Jimmy Billboards it kind of sounds like a mob name.
I love the fact that you can Google Jimmy Billboard and come up with Jimmy Patterson. And I don't know if they have a list anywhere of who the wealthiest Canadians are.
You think the Thompson family?
The Thompson's number one, and then you get a few other guys after that. Jimmy Patterson's not that far down the list.
Jimmy the Billboard Patterson.
Yeah.
Getting that cash.
I think he owned the BC Lions at one time, too, if I'm not mistaken.
All right, I guess here we go. Patterson Outdoor Advertising. He has a Wikipedia page, so he's got enough money for that.
He's got enough money, Brian, for a lot of other things.
Yeah, I mean, good for him, I guess. He's
not a young guy anymore. He's got to be up there.
Okay, so Patterson Outdoor Advertising is Canada's largest out-of-home advertising company, holding more than 55% of the national market share in horizontal posters and a 43% market share of all traditional out-of-home media.
By the way, horizontal poster?
What does that mean?
That's a billboard.
Patterson Outdoor is a division of the Jim Patterson Group.
So when you drive along the QEW or the 401 or the Don Valley Parkway, and you see billboards, especially on the QEW, and you see billboards, you'll often see the name Patterson in the corner.
All right, try to find out how much money this guy's worth, though.
I think it's in the billions.
Billions in the billboard game.
Yes. It's another business we missed out on.
Though how much money can you make in that? And
if you own every one of them.
Well, he doesn't even own every one of them. Well, he owns like 50% of them.
Well, it tells you how big
that's enough.
Yeah, if you own 50% of any business, I don't care what the business is.
If it's a national business or even more than that, if it's
you're doing okay.
Going global, you're doing okay. Well, I would suggest there's probably a lot of people in the city that wish they were in Chicago right now at Wrigley Field because the Jays are rolling through Wrigley this weekend. And you and I, we've both been there. Have you been there just as a fan or strictly media?
I've done both.
You've done both. I've done as a fan twice. Two very different experiences. One with my wife, like early into our relationship. Second, bachelor party. So as different as you can get. Both two of my favorite sporting experiences.
Okay, which one was better?
Well, the Bachelor was kind of crazy. It was, I think it was the Kentucky Derby. No, it was the final one, so the Belmont. One of the horse, I can't remember, it would have been 3 years ago. So there was a horse that took down the Derby, the Preakness, and was going for the Triple Crown. I don't remember what the horse's name was. But it was that afternoon, and it was Cubs, Mets, or something like that. And then we stormed out of Wrigley. We left like halfway through the ninth. They were brutal at that point still. Jeff Samardzija was on the mound before he had been traded. And we like ran across the street to some local pub that was loaded in Wrigleyville just in time for the beginning of the Belmont. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, those things always stick with you. Your first time in the, you know, I call them stadiums of our life because you can go to some ballparks and never remember, never care to see them again. They're just ballparks. They're just normal. They're just anything. If you were at Exhibition Stadium for baseball games, so what? You were at Exhibition Stadium for baseball games. But when you go to the Shrines, Fenway, Wrigley, now the ballpark in Pittsburgh, the ballpark in San Francisco, to me, Camden Yards is still on that list out of Baltimore.
Dodger Stadium would be
up
there.
Dodger Stadium. Although Dodger Stadium did not impress me the way I thought it was going to.
I've never been there, so I can't speak to it. I'm just talking. It's been around for a long time. And I've
been really lucky in terms of my viewing of these things. My first time at Wrigley was for a playoff game. It was the Cubs and the San Francisco Giants. I don't know if it was the NLCS or the first the first round of playoffs. So, you know, those the years meld too much together for me now. But to be there for a playoff game, the vibe and the feel outside and the feel inside and all of that was sensational. And it was the same thing. My first time at Dodger Stadium was as a fan watching the Expos and the Dodgers in the playoffs in 1981. And so you got a shot. There was a guy named Harry Ornest who at the time later bought the St. Louis Blues, later owned the Toronto Argonauts. Harry Ornest and I became friends for some reason. I'm not exactly sure how. But I was covering the Calgary Flames, and we're in Los Angeles for a Calgary-Los Angeles game. And the day before the game, the Expos and the Dodgers are playing in the playoffs. And Harry Ornest gave us his box seats.
You were up in the box,
no,
too.
Like what they call box, like by the field box.
Oh, I see.
Like, you know, Yankee Stadium right down by home plate.
Right by the field.
We were right by the field. In just phenomenal seats for what was really a one-sided baseball game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Dodger Stadium I missed out on. I'm disappointed in that. That was another one of the wife trips a couple of years ago. We went to California, and we were doing the L.A. drive up the coast to San Fran, and I could pick one spot, and I went to AT&T.
If you're able to pick a ballpark, I think it's that in Pittsburgh, to me, are the best ballparks in the big leagues.
Yeah, PNC's brilliant. I went to PNC early, like... I'd have to look up the date, but I feel like it was one of the first 35, 40 games ever played there. It was like brand new.
Was it a good crowd? Like they're getting good crowds
okay.
Now.
Okay. I was a bit surprised at how barren it was and how cheap the tickets were.
Pittsburgh was a bad baseball town for a very long time.
Yeah.
With all the success they had.
It's got a long history. The Pirates have been there forever. Some great, great players. But you've been to Pittsburgh many times. I've been a few times. It's a Steelers town, first and foremost.
Oh, my.
I mean,
it's a Steelers. But you know what? It's a great hockey town. It is a great, great hockey
town. It is when Lemieux's rocking and when Sid's rocking.
Well,
I'm sure if you went around 2003, you know, it might be a different story, or before Lemieux got there, maybe a bit of a different story.
Think of the good fortune of Pittsburgh, the city.
A lot like Edmonton.
But think of Toronto has not had an MVP in the NHL forever. They've not had a leading scorer in the NHL, basically, I'm using hyperbole here, forever. They've rarely, if ever, had close to the best player in the league. They've had Crosby. They've had Malkin. They've had Jaromir Jagr. They've had Lemieux. They've had, like, 15 scoring champions.
They had Ron Francis. They had Paul Coffey. Yeah,
no, but I'm saying that secondary guy. I mean... Those are leading
Ron
scorers.
Francis is not a secondary
okay.
guy.
Okay, he was the second line center.
And Paul Coffey is not a secondary
okay.
guy. Like, that's the point.
Yeah, I understand.
You're right.
That.
In the context of those teams, but, they would be. But
like, who was the best Leaf to win a closest guy to win a scoring title? Like, as good as Sundin was, he was never really knocking on the door for a
wasn't.
Scoring championship or an MVP for that matter.
Gilmore. In 93, had 127 points.
At 92, I think he had a crazy...
Yeah, that was the first one. 92-93, had 127. The next year, 93-94, he had 111 points.
Yeah.
The 127, I think Lemieux had like 163 that year and won the MVP. And I think he had like 163 in like 65 games or something like that.
The amazing thing of those two Gilmore seasons, and for people who weren't around, boy, did you miss something. I think he had more than 60 playoff points. In 2 years.
Gilmore?
Yeah. If you think of that in any context at all, at any time in the history of the game, in the Gretzky era, in the highest scoring era, in the 60s, in the 90s, whenever, 60 points in two playoff seasons. I mean, we were raving about Crosby this year. What did he end up with? 20-something?
Now, different era, and yeah. They went to 7 games every single series.
Yeah.
So I'm not downplaying the greatness, but it wasn't like they were sweep.
No,
losing six, it was like 7-7-7.
Okay, but I'm gonna add something else to that. Gilmore scores 60 points in two playoff seasons in Toronto, not getting to a Stanley Cup final. In St. Louis, he led the Stanley Cup finals in scoring, not getting to a Stanley Cup final. That guy was a playoff guy.
That's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's why it's Dougie Gilmore.
I know, but to me, again, sometimes you forget though, those kind of things. How many guys have ever led the playoffs in scoring and not making it to the final round? I think Peter Forsberg and Gilmore are the only two.
Yeah, some fan bases are just lucky. They just get lucky. And I was on the Bleacher Report's website earlier this afternoon, and they're coming out with summer content, right? So everyone's got the same, hey, top 100 players that are left-handed, and, you know, all these stupid kind of BuzzFeed type lists.
Oh, yeah.
But they had listed all 30 NBA teams' all-time depth charts. So I think they filled up a 12-man roster. And you look at some of the teams, like the Lakers and the Celtics, even the 76ers had some greatness. Greatness. There were a couple of other teams where you looked at it and you're like, oh, man. But specifically Boston and the Lakers. And then you get to the Raptors. And
they're actually pretty good, though.
Not compared to the other great
teams. It's not Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer.
No.
But, you know, if you're doing the best Raptors ever, it's Lowry. It's DeRozan. It's Bosch. It's Carter.
But then the fifth spot is where...
And then it's like...
It should be
Antonio Davis, or is it Damon Stoudemire, depending on how you...
Well, but they did it based on position. They actually had Valanciunas at center.
No, it's got to be Antonio
Davis. It's Davis.
If he played 1 minute at center, it was a better minute than Valanciunas ever
And more
played.
Significant minute.
Yeah.
No question. I read that, and I'm like, they clearly don't remember. They don't know the market. They weren't focused on it. I don't blame them. But Davis would absolutely be the five for every Raptor fan here in the city. But you think about it the same way with hockey, right? Like, you could do the Habs, probably Chicago, Edmonton,
Boston,
and you would have guys on the second, third line, second, third D pairings, backup goalie, where you'd be like, wow, that guy would be a number one on 20 other teams in the league, including probably here in Toronto in a lot of cases.
Have you been to the arena in Vancouver?
No, I haven't.
Okay, there's a wall where they honor the all-time Canucks. And if you want to get a chuckle, take a look at the wall of the all-time Canucks. It's like Jyrki Lume and Tony Tanti. And I mean, the Sedins are obviously going to be there.
And Bure's there, and Linden's
there. But there's
there.
Not much. I mean, it's not like...
And they've been around for a long time,
they're,
Vancouver.
They're almost 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming up on 50 years, I think, in a few years. But they don't have that... Like, the guys they've honored are not exactly...
That'd be a great piece to write or take the time to look into. The Canadian teams, you probably have to take the Habs out of it, but the other six Canadian teams, including the Leafs, who were an original six team who have been around for 100 years, the best starting five, where would the Leafs be?
Well, the Oilers would be better than everyone.
Oilers would be better than Montreal, I think.
But that's an interesting one. I think Montreal's defense...
Maybe. And their goaltending. Montreal's goaltending would be better.
Well, Edmonton's goaltending's pretty good. Grant Fuhr.
Fuhr, but I think most would take Wall over Fuhr. Most would take...
Or Plante, or whoever you're going to pick.
Yeah, Dryden, whomever. But anyway, okay, let's include Montreal.
Okay.
In a starting five.
So your Montreal starting five is Béliveau, Richard, and is it LaFleur?
Probably
as your three forwards?
Yes, LaFleur.
And if not, you're looking at an Elmer Locke or one of those kind of guys, or Toe Blake. So those are your three, I think. And on defense, it's probably Robinson and
Savard.
Yeah, and then we're missing Doug Harvey. Sorry.
Doug Harvey.
It's Doug Harvey and Robinson, I would think, are
and
your
then
two.
Let's say Waugh, just for argument's sake.
That's awfully good.
That's awfully good. But Edmonton would have Gretzky. Let's say you move Messier to the wing, although I don't think that's fair
but he played a fair bit of wing before they moved him to center.
Curry, Gretzky, Messier, like McDavid's not even in the starting lineup.
No, not yet.
And then Coffey.
And probably Lowe.
Yeah, probably Lowe and then...
And that's where the difference is. Coffey and Lowe versus Harvey and Robinson, to me, doesn't equal.
Calgary could maybe put together a pretty good team.
Well, Calgary would, but the forwards would not be... The Gretzky Messiers, you know, you would have, you know, whether
probably
it be Neuwendijk or Gilmore or Lube or whichever ones you're going to go with, they would be pretty good on the back end with McGinnis to start with, and then whoever your second defenseman was.
Probably the bottom end teams would be Ottawa and Vancouver, because Winnipeg, you could put together Howard Chuck, Solani, and Who else could you put up the middle? I don't know. That's tough.
Laine's getting, you know, yeah. Or Shifley's getting in the conversation too, probably.
But Winnipeg, I'm sure I'm missing somebody. But
yeah, but I mean, if you look at Winnipeg anyway. And you consider the WHA teams where you had Nielsen and Hall. Hedberg and Hall, and yeah. You know, they had great. But some of the, like, the best Vancouver you would have. Who's the best Vancouver Canucks center? Is it Trevor Linden? Or is it Sedin?
Probably Sedin.
So Sedin's the best center ever. Burray's the best winger.
You probably put the other Sedin in there. It might be both Sedins and Burray's your top line.
Or Naslin, depending on where you put him.
Mm-hmm. So Bertuzzi at a time.
Those are your forwards. Who's your best defenseman? That's why Yrkie Lume's on the wall there.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Who that would be? I mean, I don't have enough of a handle on their history.
Babich? I don't know who. You know, I don't know which guy would be.
Yeah, and then who, like Kirk McLean in net?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know, man. I really don't know.
You know, we don't know.
No, it's kind
of. You know, it might be Luongo.
That's a great. That would be a great question for people in Vancouver. Who would, now that the dust has settled a little bit? Luongo, probably Luongo. Probably, although McLean got him to a cup
final. I'd love to know who the two defensemen are.
It's got to be someone from that 94 team, that I'm not thinking of. Who was their number
Lume,
one guy?
Lume, Hedekin, I don't know.
There's got to be somebody, Steve.
There's not a lot of second-team All-Star guys we're thinking of.
Someone who knows Vancouver.
Okay, Ottawa. Carlson's on D. Who's your other defenseman?
Carlson. Oh, is Chara or Phillips? Okay, or Redden.
Yeah. Sorry, Chara.
Chara and Carlson, you're in a good spot right there.
The goalie. Anderson?
Hasek played for a short period
of
time.
Okay, fairness.
You
yep.
put him in there.
Okay.
Up front, though, man. It's
Alfredson and who?
Alfredson, probably Spezza, Yashin.
Hossa.
Danny Heatley. Actually, you know what? They're not that bad. Like, Heatley had two or three years where he scored 50 there. Hossa is a great player.
Okay, modern era, what's your Leaf team?
So, define modern era. What was that? Post-expansion?
Post-67.
If it's just three forward spots, if we're allowing for that, then I would go Sittler, Sundin, Gilmore up front. And I would go Salming. And who am I going with after that? Is it Caberle?
How long? Yeah, it might be Caberle. How long?
I'm missing someone.
When did Tim Horton retire? Can we sneak him in?
I don't think
there?
Tim counts. No, I don't think so.
And is the goalie Curtis?
Yeah, I'd probably go with Cujo.
Or is it Pommettier?
No. And it wouldn't be Potvin, I don't think.
Ian Turnbull?
I mean, you would know better than I. I know he was a guy who surprised. He put up good numbers at times.
Ian Turnbull was the guy who you always expected to be better than he was. And for whatever reason, he never did become better than he was. But, you know, how many Leafs have actually gotten votes for, like, Norris trophies and things like that? Other than Borja Salming, who...
No one else.
I think he's really underrated guy, by the way. I think Salming's really underrated because he played on such terrible teams.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had ever played on teams that were better, you would have seen, you know, more of him.
Man, that's tough. Yeah, it probably would be Salming and Caberle.
Is Caberle ahead of McCabe?
Yeah, they're right there. I mean, pick your poison. Two different styles of players, but...
Who would have been, like, the top defenseman in the Roger Nielsen... Pat Burns didn't have a great defenseman, really. Sylvain Lefebvre may have been his best.
Yeah, they had, like, Ellett and McCowan and...
I mean, like, decent NHL players, but not a... Nobody's going to make an all-star game.
No, they did it by committee.
Yeah.
They were a defense corps by committee.
And if you go back to, you know, the Salming years, there was Salming, and there was Turnbull, and there was maybe Jimmy McKenney. And
Ryan tweeting, an ally of Frady? Would you even consider I of Frady?
No. Another guy you expected to be better than he was and just didn't happen.
No.
So...
Yeah, I don't know,
man. It's kind of sad when you look at it from that perspective.
Well,
we're closer to Vancouver than we think.
Oh, Toronto absolutely is in the modern era.
Because
sure.
if you look at it, Burray, Sedin, and Sedin is pretty equal to Gilmore, Sundin, Siltler.
I'd put the Leafs a bit ahead, but I think. Do you think the Sedins are making the Hall of Fame? Not that defines
yes.
it.
Yes,
but
I do.
I think they will too.
Do you think Daryl Sittler gets enough credit for how good a player he was?
Probably not, but it's tough for me. It was before my time.
I mean, especially when you look at the numbers now, how many great years he had. and how he was always top 10 or very close to top 10 in scoring.
Well, I think anyone affiliated with Ballard deserves more credit than they get because of the circus that they had to work under.
And what would have happened had Sittler and McDonald stayed together? You know, they were, at that time, they were bossy Trotche-like.
Mm-hmm. Well, they beat the Islanders, right? In
very famous.
Whatever it was, 70.
78?
Yeah, before the Islanders went on that run. Matt Chatham will join us, three-time Super Bowl champ with the New England Patriots. Cutler looked okay last night. He survived. We'll get you an update on Cutler. And Kevin Durant has been very outspoken about how he will not be accepting the invitation to the White House. I don't think anyone from that Warriors team is going. Matt Chatham went to the White House three times. We'll ask him to detail how that process worked out. Was it a team vote? Did guys have to vote on it? Was it just accepted that everyone was going to go? So we'll catch up with Matt Chatham, and we'll get into, again, what's going on throughout the world of the NFL with him next. So the NFL preseason has been underway for a bit. Couple of stories coming out of last night. Tyrod Taylor still is not the kind of quarterback you want on your team.
He looked horrible.
It's preseason, so I want to control myself here. But
no, he looked horrible.
He's not a good quarterback,
though. You can't be okay on the, and they give you the 10 plays or whatever you're going to run 55 times in practice during the week of the game, so you know exactly what you're doing and how you're doing it. He can't play.
It's just a matter of time before the Bills move on. I think they will try to draft someone next season in the draft, and that'll be their new quarterback.
Maybe their whole plan is to have him play so that they get to where they need to be, so they get that. Is it USC or UCLA, the quarterback?
Well, they're coming out of both. There's Josh Rosen is the UCLA kid, but Sam Darnold, I think that's the one
that everybody's now talking about.
He's a Trojan, yeah.
He's the one that people are saying is going to be the first pick. Want to touch Jimmy Patterson for just 1 second? We were talking about him before the break. He's worth $5.74 billion. 10th wealthiest man in Canada.
And that's Jimmy the Billboard.
Jimmy Billboard.
Jimmy Billboard is worth almost $6 billion.
Give or take a dime.
Good for him, man. If you can make a buck, make it. Matt Chatham will join us, three-time Super Bowl champ. We'll get to him in 2 minutes. We were talking about this earlier in the week, the idea that the Pats are going to go 16-0 this year. And you and I, we both said, you can't commit to that. You can't go into a season expecting a team to go 16-0.
Well, last night's football game, although there's no comparison between CFL and NFL, but watching the Edmonton Eskimos undefeated last night play, they had nothing. They couldn't do a thing right. They couldn't tackle anybody. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't throw the ball. Mike Riley, who's terrific, had a terrible game. It was just watching them as the best team in the CFL, you can realize you can't be great every single game. And that's why I would never pick a team to be 16. As good as the Patriots are, as good as Tom Brady is, as great as Belichick.
As bad as their division is.
Well, they get 6 free wins to start. They do get that.
You would presume, anyway. Let's bring in 3-time Super Bowl champ with the Pats and founder of footballbyfootball.com. Here's Matt Chatham. Matt, are you trying to douse the fires, the idea that the Pats can go 16-0, or are you embracing that take?
I wouldn't call them fires, just more of an aggravation. No, I thought it was a silly topic to begin with, especially in light of when we start predicting who people are going, what the records are going to be. I don't know who's playing for them and who they're going to beat, and I think we're still going through some situations now where they're trying to figure out their roster. It was, you know, Brandon Cook's thing really, I think, shot expectations up high. Which, you know, from at least the offensive side of the ball is reasonable. That's, you know, he's an incredible weapon. He's at the kind of camp that would make you think that, wow, as good as the offense was a year ago with a healthy Gronk, it could be that much better. But they've had a lot of attrition on the defense in a few spots, mainly the edge spots, with Rob Ninkovich retiring, Jabal Sheard moving on to Indianapolis, and then Chris Long going to Philly. So three really productive vets leave. And it doesn't mean that they don't have the answers. It's just that, you know, let's let it play out before we start predicting their record.
What about the idea of going into the season in terms of who could represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, would you go with the Pats or would you go with the field?
Oh, that's an interesting one. No, I think I'd still go with the Pats. I mean, I think what the Patriots have the opportunity here in front of them is to put together a better team than they had a year ago. But one of the things that I think is a little bit unusual to sort of jump to until you start playing the games is, and I guess it's probably a way I would anticipate Coach Belichick would frame this to the guys as well. It's really easy to look at what they could be, and he wants to keep them from looking at that. But if he wants to look at, you know, if he wants them to focus on something, he'll take the first half of the Super Bowl, right? He won't say, hey, you're the defending champ, and now you have these new people. He'll say, hey, you're a team that was down 25 points in a Super Bowl. Now we're talking about it in a few seasons. So it's more just focusing on the part that might warrant more work as opposed to the other hopeful wishful stuff.
There's so many things to be amazed about Tom Brady, but one of the things when you follow his career that's forever amazed me is receivers go to New England who may not have been such a big deal or may not even be a big deal there. And all of a sudden, you've got Wes Welker catching a million passes, or you got Julian Edelman catching a million passes, guys who might have been disregarded in other places. When you take a guy like Cooks and add it to that offense, and they really haven't had what I would call an A wide receiver since Randy Moss, how much different can he make this team be, and will they use him enough to make a difference?
Well, I think this is one of the unique situations. You went through the list of guys that have had much more success here maybe than other places. Edelman's a little unique situation in that, man, he played quarterback, so he was going to be a project wherever he went, and this is sort of a unique place in that they believe you have a skill set, they'll sit and develop you. And it took a few years before Julian was anywhere near the player that he now is. In some other situations, like maybe like a Wes Welker, he wasn't a good NFL offense. You know, he was an undrafted guy, yes, but he wasn't in an offense that really took advantage of what he could do. This is one of those rare situations where, you know, Brandon Cooks just came from playing with Drew Brees. No slouch. You know, he's one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL himself. He's a top three, top five guy, wherever you want to slot him. But I think one of the rarities here is just the quality of depth across the board. So I'm not so sure that Brandon Cooks, you know, his overall production spikes necessarily, because it's just, there's only so much food to go around. But I think he provides an interesting element in that they actually had a really good, one of the best, you know, on yards per attempt, deep dudes, or yards per catch, or whatever the hell it was, with Chris Hogan, which is what's been unique, sort of watching them guys go through joint practices and some of the more competitive team stuff, is now you basically have two legitimate guys who might run stretch the field plays, whether it's inside or out. You separate those guys from one another, and that generally forces teams into two shell coverages, which is great. That opens up the inside of the defense. And as good as Brandon Cooks has been, Chris Hogan has been torching people at camp. I swear he's had 10 big play over the top kind of things throughout the course of the joint. So that to me is, it's more just the guy. It's sort of the combination of him with the other pieces they have. And then what it does to those really unique elements that they have on the inside, like Rob Gronkowski, the back game with James White and Deion Lewis and now Rex Burkhead. All guys that, man, if you're going to grant them space by stretching things out with other people, everybody becomes more effective. So, yeah, Brandon Cooks is a stud. He's been really fun to watch. But I think the most exciting part is just how the puzzle fits here and what it could potentially be.
We're chatting with three-time Super Bowl champ with the Pats. He is Matt Chatham. His website is footballbyfootball.com. So you're well aware what's going on down in the States, and there's a lot of emotion pouring over into the sports world. And Kevin Durant came out yesterday, and we expect the Golden State Warriors will be invited to the White House. And KD came out and said, I got no interest in going. You went three times earlier in your career. Take us through that process. Like, how does that work? Do players have to, like, RSVP? Is it just accepted that everyone's going? Do you vote on it? What was that White House process like leading up to actually accepting the invitation?
Yeah, so we got to make that show up obviously three times in 4 years, and during those years, those were George Bush's presidency at the time. So I think, it's certainly not as divisive as things are now, but you may have had a big portion of the locker room that wouldn't have been as big a fan of his as maybe some are not now of Trump. But I think we're at sort of a different tenor now. It's changed as much in what's happened maybe the last week and how that guy handled it. I would presume that it doesn't really have much to do with political affiliation at this point. Just a lot of people don't respect the guy. So I know in years past it would just be, hey, the media relations is going to make everyone aware of the date. It's a lot. You know, I always try to say this to people when we talk about going to visit the air quote president. It's more about visiting the White House. So he's a real small part of your day. You're getting to go in sort of the back, you know, the back scenes of the White House, just a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You're not going to see that maybe someone buying a ticket can come as a tourist. So that's really cool and unique. So it's really a day of a lot of different things relating to seeing behind the scenes in D.C. That's cool. The president is the public appearance you always see on night, you know, on your the highlight shows and things like that. But it's really a lesser part of your day. But I say that, and I think now because it's become so associated with that, it almost might be, you know, sort of a stigma that guys want to stay with. It's like, I don't want to be around that. So I have a sense that how it was for me, it's changed quite a bit now.
For you personally, when you go the first time and it's all new and you haven't been before and it's an exciting tour, and then you go the second time and then you go the third time, is it like, why are we doing this again?
Yeah, well, that's a great point, and it was something that we kind of talked about a little this year when people were doing comparative photos of 2 years ago, which Patriots went, and then which ones did or didn't go this time, and that was something we absolutely had. There was attrition. We had year one, it's the coolest thing ever. You know, you beat the Rams with the greatest show on turf and all that. Everyone's excited. We had a huge number. But you go 3 times in 4 years, it doesn't matter that it's the White House. It could have been go to anything, go to a museum, go to McDonald's, whatever. You're going to have less attendance after it's something where been there, done that. And that definitely happened. You saw a little bit of that this time, too, from some of the vets that have been on both Super Bowls. So I think that's just natural. I still went. Personally, I thought it was still kind of cool. And kind of get to this point where you're like, man, am I really at the point in my life where I'm turning things like this down? You know, this is an unusual opportunity, and I kind of presume that the gravy train will at some point stop. So I went ahead and went. But it's a personal choice thing. A lot of guys don't feel that way.
Well, and that's what I feel is more than likely going to happen is peer pressure. Like, you look at the Warriors in particular. I don't think any of them are going to go, including Steve Kerr, who's probably going to lead the charge. He's been so outspoken against Trump and ridiculed him publicly. But what if there is a guy in the room who's like, listen, I don't like Trump either. I didn't vote for him. I didn't support him. But I kind of want the experience. Yet that guy's probably not going to be able to go because the peer pressure is going to reverse. Like forever,
politics have all changed.
Right, because forever it was, if you don't go, you're anti-team and anti-America. Right. How can you do that? Now it's like, no, you can't go because it's like almost taboo to go to the White House now.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And it's just that, like I said, the tenor has changed so dramatically recently. And one of the things I would be interested to see if they do is, if it make it more about what I said, which was, you're not visiting. We are, again, not framing it as going to visit the president. You're not going to visit the president. You're going to the White House. You're going to visit D.C. and take the guy out of the formula. I mean, let someone else do. You know, you could meet Mike Pence. You know, or meet someone else, or meet the, you know, the state senator, or I'm sorry, the senator from your state, or whoever the rep is that would be nearest Golden State or whatever. Have some sort of party or reason to be there other than the top guy. That's not really the point of the day anyway. It just ends up being the camera out that's most leaned on.
Do you remember the big deal it was when Tim Thomas didn't go with the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, exactly.
That was
a
huge thing at the time.
Right, and he almost got run out of Boston because of it. It was like, it wasn't even about Obama. It was like, how could you do that to your teammates? And this is all about solidarity. And now
his career went. By the way, his career went completely downhill from then.
Yeah, I mean,
that
was kind of
the
tip of the iceberg. Before you know it, he was in like a bunker in Colorado with 15 guns, and it got a little bit scary there for Tim. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And season right around the corner. So once the games start, a lot of focus on the actual football, and you guys will be all over it at footballbyfootball.com. He is 3-time Super Bowl champ with the Pats. Longtime NFLer, Matt Chatham. Thanks for doing this, Matt. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
There he is. Matt Chatham. Yeah, I think that is going to be the case in the NBA, in the NFL, predominantly black leagues and sports, will have a different approach to the White House invitation than the NHL and Major League Baseball.
And perhaps they should have, really, when you look at what's going on in the United States and not trying to be too political. But I'm not sure I would want. What you're doing is you're doing PR for the country and you're doing PR for that presidency, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. He's getting out in front. He's making a couple of, you know, jokes about your team and getting his picture taken with everybody. He's pronouncing Steve Yzerman's name wrong and doing all that kind of stuff.
It's a total PR stunt.
Yeah. And so if you don't believe in the current administration, then why would you want to do PR for the current administration as much as you love or care about your country?
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting one, you know.
It's also, though, like what I said, the White House is a museum in and of itself. And
you can go and do your White House tour.
You can, but you're not going to get the access
of being
a personal invitee of the president to the White House.
You are not going to get your name mispronounced.
No, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So I could see a couple players being like, listen, I don't like it. It's not going to happen. I might be outcasted from my own team, so I can't do it. But I really want to walk around the White House.
I would think, in a sport like basketball, though, where you don't have a lot of players, and usually there's three or four voices on a team that matter, and they determine sort of how the team is and what the team is and how the team behaves and all those things that go along with sort of what a team becomes. And if one or two of those guys do not want to do this, then I think it creates a message.
I don't think any of them are going. I don't think the Warriors are going, period. I don't think any of them will go.
Well, especially you made a great point about the coach.
Yeah, that's unprecedented. A coach
It's not unprecedented because Popovich did the same thing.
But didn't
win.
He didn't say I'm not going.
No, but they didn't win.
If he doesn't go, it'll be unprecedented where a coach turns down the invitation. Scott Miller will join us from the Bleacher Report. We'll get back into Major League Baseball in about 45 minutes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.
It's time for an Elite Eight battle in TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Oh, what a hit that one!
This is the worst one for sure.
All right, before we get to that Elite Eight battle, we got to start with the winner from today's Sound War battle between Brian McCabe's gastric bypass surgery shot at the O-Dog at the draft and my infamous They Did It Nailer about a year and a half ago during our lottery show. So today's winner is...
The first pick goes to... The Maple Leafs!
The Toronto Maple Leafs!
The Leafs!
The Leafs!
They Did It Nailer!
I can't believe that clip was allowed to be a part of this battle. Because I think it is well beyond a year removed from when we began this whole thing.
Statute of limitations should remove it.
I believe so.
Permanently.
Yeah, I think it should have been a 12-month kind of statute, but apparently we're bending the rules around here. So They Did It Nailer lives on. It's moving on.
Not beyond today, however.
We'll see. The best sound bites are down to the Elite Eight, brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. So these are the best sound bites. We're down to the Elite Eight. Let's begin with seed number 3.
How's your breath?
It's not good, eh?
No, I meant in terms of conditioning.
Oh.
That one also, the statute of limitations would not allow for that. So I guess if we're going to bend the rules, we got to do it for Phil. That is seed number 3. Seed number 7.
I always wish to win one of these, and I got it. So thank you very much for giving me this. And I appreciate my fans also. My wife and my girlfriend. My wife. Yeah, sorry to say. I'm so sorry, my wife. Lizzo, I love you so much. Aya, I love you so much from my heart. Ne?
That one has got a soft spot with me. I mean, this poor bastard. The guy goes... Thank you to my wife, and follows it up with thank you to my girlfriend.
Would you not like to have been in the house later to have heard that conversation?
That's a tough dinner time conversation, I would think. Go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite soundbite. Seed number 3 versus seed number 7. Voting for this Sound Wars closes Monday at 8 a.m. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle right here on TSN 1050. Sound Wars is brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. You can find it now at select Loblaws grocery stores. Hour 2 up next. We're tracking the Jays at Wrigley. Get back into the NFL news and this idea that Tavares could be a Maple Leaf. We'll tackle that next.